Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Blue White Breakdown, the premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live. Here are your hosts, Bob Flounders and Johnny McGonigal.
Penn State football fans, we are back, and you know, your eyes do not deceive you. We're taping both of these podcasts very, very closely together. There's some time constraints we're going to have with the NFL draft. So if it looks like we're wearing the same pullovers, I don't have two red NHL, you know, Molson Canadian pullovers. It's the same one. Johnny, we were in agreement. We're going to knock them out. We're talking about Penn State and the NFL draft. It gets underway Thursday. Then it's second and third rounds are on Friday. The last, you know, rounds 4 through 7 on Saturday. And Penn State is going to be well represented at this draft. I think Johnny and I, we've talked, there is a pretty good chance that 10 guys could get picked. It would be the most ever for a James Franklin class and the most in a long time at Penn State. It's exciting to think about actually the 2025 class, but Johnny, our focus after months and months of Penn State Pro Day, the Scouting Combine, Senior Bowl, East-West Shrine Game, all that stuff. We are laser-focused. We're going to talk about all the guys. But, Johnny, you're looking good. I think we got to start with the guy that we probably feel most positive about where he's going to go, and that's Olufashanu, one of the great Penn State stories in recent Penn State program history. Johnny, I just think back to, you know, he only started in the 2021 Outback Bowl, which is, I think was January 1st of 2022, because I think Rasheed Walker was not healthy. It was his first career start at tackle. He played really well, and that was just a very, very, very brief glimpse of what was going to happen in 2022. He carried over into 2023. He is a first-round pick. I think that I don't see any scenario where he slides too far. A prototype left tackle, maybe can get a little bit better with physicality in the run game. But if you need a pass blocker to play left tackle, I mean, he is a first-round talent. We know he's going to go somewhere. Johnny, I know you're going to also have a mock draft. I don't know if you want to leak any of that out, but how do you feel about Olu the first round and just the story about how he became the rapid ascension of Olufashanu at Penn State?
Bob, I'm still stuck on the fact that you only have one Molson Canadian hoodie.
I know. I'm a little disappointed. Also, I made a promise on the last podcast that I was going to make amends to a large segment, the Penn State fan base. It is Buc-ee's. I'm wearing the Buc-ee's visor, one of 38 visors that I have in my house because my head is too wide and too big to wear baseball caps. I'm so jealous. But yeah, it is Buc-ee's and it's not Chucky's. And we were talking about a Hawaiian shirt that your buddy has that I think you're going to be rocking down at the shore. But yes, shout out to Buc-ee's and all of the Legion of fans. I'm going to be better. Also, Johnny, I'm looking forward to when they come. I think they're coming into Pennsylvania pretty soon.
I think they are. Bob, I picture, you remember the MTV Cribs show? I don't know if that was a frequent watch for you as it was for me.
Sure.
But when you know, you have athletes or whoever, you know, celebrities show in their closets.
I think I know where you're going with this. I just figured it out. Go ahead.
They're showing their closets and they're like, hey, this is my shoe closet. There's my, you know, my collection of Jordans. Here's all my dresses. Here's all my, you know, Gucci handbags, whatever. I picture that in your Harrisburg home.
Yeah.
You just have a closet dedicated to visors.
Forest Light and Screwball. That's it. Those three things.
Forest Light and Screwball. And until about 3 minutes ago, I expected you to have a closet of just, you know, beer branded hoodies, but it seems that that's the only Canadian Molson one you got. So that's stunning.
Yeah, I have a couple of bar hoodies. I have a huge St. Mary's, Pennsylvania. That's a St. Mary. It's a bar there. Dinos. I have a huge Dinos collection of stuff that I can wear, but I need to get more, considering, you know, how much I endorse their products and use their products and frequent bars. I think I should be the first person in downtown Harrisburg. I should be getting all of the merch when it comes to stuff like that, because you know what, if I wear it, I'm going to endorse it proudly. Yeah. I'm not one of those people that if I get, you know, something that is like Coors Light related, I get it. And I don't celebrate the product. I'm going to celebrate Coors Light.
Well, Bob, Nick Singleton has a Roback deal. I think I deserve one, maybe a sponsorship for the podcast. Yeah. I think you deserve an NIL deal with Coors and soon enough with Bucky's for both of us. But Anyway, you know, someone who is making money off their football and will be making a hell of a lot more money come Thursday night and in the weeks ahead when he puts pen to paper is Olu Fashanu. You like that transition, Bob, from Bucky's and Roback to Olu?
You're just improving every day in front of my eyes. I couldn't be any prouder. You're kicking ass, taking names. Keep it up.
Olu Fashanu also kicks ass and takes names on the football field, Bob. He is a damn good left tackle, and he's going to be the first Penn State player off the board, at least what we expect, right?
You can't say that.
You can't say for sure, I guess, because it's the NFL draft, and you never know. And there could be a team on the fringe of the top 10 that falls in love with Chop Robinson and decides that his, you know, first step and his get-off and his explosiveness is good enough to take that early. But Olu Fashanu, you know, I think he's a top 5, top 10 talent in this draft. I think he might get pushed down a little bit as things tend to go with a run on quarterbacks and wide receivers. You look at, you know, the teams near the top of the draft, and you're looking at J.J. McCarthy, and it's unfortunate that that's the first name that came to mind, but he's just been all over the reports of him going in the top 5, top 6, which is crazy to me. But, you know, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, obviously, Drake May. And then you've got guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze from Washington. These guys, I think, going in the top 10 will probably push Olu down a little bit. But there's going to be a team that's really happy to take Olu Fashanu in the, you know, 14 to 15 or 12 range, you know, maybe as high as 7 to the Tennessee Titans, although it seemingly looks like Joe Alt from Notre Dame could be the pick there. Yeah. It's a really deep tackle class. You know, I mentioned Joe Alt from Notre Dame, Talies Fuega, you know, Troy Faltana,
Latham,
even, you know, Latham, Guyton, Mims. Like, it's a really deep tackle class, but I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better pass protector in this class than Olu. You know, he has some room to grow in the run game, but he has the size, he has the feet, he has the smarts. I mean, you talk about, you know, just him as a human being, he is an incredibly bright guy. And I think that, you know, there's not a single red flag on Olu's resume when it comes to the NFL draft and projecting well to the NFL. Mm-hmm. And so I think a team is going to be really happy to take him. And like you mentioned, Bob, a great story, because, you know, I don't think even football was really on his radar in high school. When it comes to Penn State, you know, with his size and everything as a 4-star prospect, but, you know, he was a developmental guy, a project. Yeah. And, you know, starting the Outback Bowl in 2021 and really just by mid season in 2022, you know, talking to Dane Brugler from The Athletic, he was like, he's a top 5 guy. He's a top, you know, he's a first round product right now. Decides to come back because he wants to push for a national title and a Big Ten title with Penn State. They don't get that done last year, but, you know, Olu still played really well and protected Sean Clifford in 2022, Drew Aller last season.
Yeah.
And he's going to there's going to be a quarterback in the NFL that's really happy that Olu is on his left side come next year. Next season.
Yeah, Johnny, and you were talking about 2022, and I mean, I don't want to be obvious, but we're talking about a player in his rapid ascension, and how is this possible? How does he go from making his first career start in the Outback Bowl to conclude 2021 and then, in, you know, in a couple of weeks or, you know, a couple of months in 2022, Dane Brugler is telling you those things about top 5 talent. Johnny, I think the Auburn game against those athletic players, when Penn State really, really did a number on an athletic Auburn defense, I think that had to have been a trigger game for Olu, because I think you said you ran into some of those dudes at the scouting combine, and like, yeah, he's legit. Like, yeah, I think they probably they were probably surprised by how good he was too. But I wonder if maybe that is really the game, because you look at that score, and if you're evaluating talent, you're like, how did Penn State go in down south and just, you know, as the game wore on, annihilate a team that is pretty athletic? And you know, he just kind of, a lot of players, Chop Robinson stood out in that game. A lot of players, that was really the start of maybe their draft buzz. And I think for Olu, that was probably the game that, and it wasn't a one-off. He just got better every week until he got hurt. And he did more of the same last season. Really, just a really great story. So let's transition. I mentioned Chop. So does Chop drop? That's my question for you, John. Do you like what I did there?
I do, Bob. little rhyming, you know, might as well, right? Yeah, look, so you mentioned that I'm doing a mock draft, and I suggested it to our editor because, you know, it seems like it's a fun deal to do. I know, like, yeah, there are a million mock drafts out there, so obviously, yep, this is not, I'm not going to be right, you know, with all these things. I'll say this too, Bob. I'm glad that it's not my job to strictly do mock drafts, because it's an undertaking. It's like, it's harder than you would think, especially like, you know, having little write-ups with each pick and everything. I do not envy the people whose job it is to just.
How about Dave Brugler? Like, I mean, what a warrior, what a commitment. I mean, and then he's available to just about anyone who wants to talk about the draft. I'm like, dude, where do you have the time? He must be the best person in terms of time management and a job in the history of like covering the draft, because I don't know how he can prepare to get something like The Beast, which is on The Athletic. And it literally, I don't know how many people he evaluated, but it is impressive. And I didn't count them up, but it seems like, I know he's got some editors overlooking it. You don't hear a lot of people chirping about mistakes. I mean, the guy is really, He's like the Olu Fashanu of draft analysts. He's just a fairly rapid ascension, and man, is he good at what he does.
He really is. Chop Robinson also really good at what he does.
Yes, and did it again.
I did it again. I mean, you're just teeing me up now. Yeah. The thing with Chop, though, is like, you put on the tape, and I'm not an NFL evaluator, but reading everything, and I mean, but I do know, I know football, and you know football, and we watched him play for Penn State over the last two seasons, and his get off, the explosiveness, it's rare. It really is. You don't come across, you know, players off the edge with that kind of speed that Chop has every day. I mean, he put it on display for everyone at the NFL Combine. But if you flip on any game, you see him just beat an offensive tackle, you know, a handful of times at least. And if he's not getting the sack, he's causing problems in the backfield. And I think the biggest knock on Chop right now, and really throughout this entire draft process, was the, you know, pressures over sacks, you know, traits versus stats kind of argument. And he's been a lightning rod for that, because he only had four sacks last year. And so you look at that and you say, okay, like, if you're, you know, say a Tampa Bay Bucks fan, and you're sitting there at 26, and say they draft Chop Robinson. You're a Bucks fan saying, we really just spent a first round pick on a guy with four sacks, you know, a defensive end. But you watch the tape, and you know, whether he's getting the sack or not, he's affecting the quarterback. He's affecting the backfield. He's creating opportunities for other guys around him to clean up. I mean, he's forcing quarterbacks up in the pocket or forcing them to scramble. And he was such an integral part of Manny Diaz's defense last year. You know, he dealt with that injury at Ohio State. It's actually, you know, it's unfortunate, Bob, you think about it. Olu Fashanu's 2022 season was cut short with an injury against Ohio State, and Chop, you know, missed some time as well. But he came back and was, you know, still kind of the same Chop, and you know, he's a first round talent. And whether or not he drops, I think will just, you know, maybe be an indicator of how the board is falling. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, even, you know, Latu from UCLA or Jared Verse from Florida State, like, those guys are top 15 talents too, and they might fall into the mid to late 20s just by virtue of how the draft falls with the quarterbacks, wide receivers, like I mentioned, in a deep tackle class. So I do think, though, I mean, the further Chop falls in the first round, in theory, you know, the better situation he falls into, yeah. right? I mean, if he goes to the 49ers at 31, like, you know, God bless those NFC West, you know, offensive lines, because, you know, him opposite Bosa would be insane. So, yeah, I think Chop is going to, yeah, he has a bright NFL future ahead of him, regardless of where he goes. But I do think he deserves to go on Thursday night. And I would expect to see and hear his name called on Thursday night.
Yeah. Two more things on Chop. I started covering Penn State football in 2002. That was a good defensive line. If you look at, there was a lot of, I mean, Spice Adams was the nose tackle. He was a second round pick. Jimmy Kennedy was on that defensive line, first round pick. Michael Haynes, defensive end, first round pick. Incredible defensive front. But you mentioned Chop's get off, and the only edge rusher, and I covered some really good edge rushers at Penn State, the only edge rusher that I would compare him, was comparable to his get off, was Aaron Maben. Aaron Maben played at Penn State. I think his last year was 08. He came out early, and he played at like 225 pounds. He was and then he bulked up and went in the first round, but I don't think he could ever really hold that weight. But he was a defensive end at 225, and his first step was amazing. But Chop's first step at 245 or 250 is the equal of that. So that's how special of an athlete I think Chop is off the edge. And the other thing is, you were talking about the production, and you know, maybe people look at that and they're like, well, how good could he be if he only, but if you really want to watch a tape that really speaks to how what Chop can do to a game, and also it flatters Adisa and Denai Dennis Sutton, the Michigan game where they ran the ball like 87 times in a row, Johnny, because the first two series, all of those guys were in the backfield. And I think Michigan knew if they let McCarthy drop back and throw the ball 20, 25 times, he was probably going to get dumped on his ass about 6 or 7 times. And they just said, you know what, we're going to run the ball and hopefully get a lead on this Penn State offense and dare them to move the ball on our defense. And they couldn't. But I just think that tape really speaks to the effect that game in the Iowa game that Chop and those guys can have and kind of change a game. And I just think, even though if you want to focus on his lack of numbers, you look at what he did in that game to force the eventual national champions to play left-handed almost and not even attempt to throw the ball, you know, in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan was playing with, you know, their left, you know, with just their left hand, arm behind their back, however you want to say it. I mean, they ran the ball because they knew that Chop Robinson was coming off the edge and was going to bury J.J. McCarthy. You know, if they decided to pass more than however many times they pass. I mean, yeah. how many times they even throw the ball that game?
7 or 8. I think I think McCarthy was 7 of 8 in that game.
Wasn't it like 30 odd like run plays in a row?
It was something I think they tried a one pass and it drew a penalty. So it didn't, I don't think it counted as a pass, but I think it was like 32 or 33 passes in a row.
They found out real quick in that first quarter.
Yeah.
Chop's get off was just, he was dialed in.
Yeah.
And I think any NFL team looks at that. And even what he did in all the other games too, but that one was big because it was on that stage against Michigan. I think a lot of NFL teams would love to have Chop Robinson, especially if you have, like, if you're not relying on him to be your number one edge rusher. Like if you have a guy already you're confident in, like, say for example, the Buccaneers have been a popular spot for him to land in mock drafts at 26 overall. They have Yaya Diaby, who as a rookie last year led the team in sacks. So you already kind of know what you have in him on one side. And if you add Chop to the other, or if you look at any of these other teams and say, hey, like, you know, I mean, maybe even the Bears, right? Like you see Montez Sweat on one side and you just need a complimentary guy who is going to cause some real problems. I think Chop Robinson can do that not only as a rookie, but really develop into one of the top pass rushers in the league. He has those kind of abilities, Bob.
Yeah. And I wouldn't even be mad if he went to a team that plays a lot of 3-4. And I honestly, yeah. I could see him transition pretty effectively to almost a stand-up outside linebacker because of his movement skills. I mean, I wouldn't want to, it's like you don't really want TJ Watt covering a ton of, you know, receivers, but you know, in a 3-4, I think whether his hands on the ground or if he's upright, I think he is a weapon. And I think he fits in just about any kind of defense. He is not scheme dependent, I think, at all. I think about what Penn State did with him rushing from the middle of the field. And I mean, he was so quick that the offensive line couldn't even get out of their stance, and he was either, you know, in the gap or he was by them. And I just the way that he can impact the game, I think the numbers will come, and it's just a different game now. It's really hard, I think, to get double digit sacks. You're going to have to get lucky to get a couple of them, but I think it's really more about pressures, and he is a pressure cooker, Johnny. Pressure cooker. Johnny, let's move to, like, maybe, you know, Friday is also a big day, I think, for Penn State. Hopefully Chap goes in round one, but if he doesn't, it's going to go early in round two, and I think he's going to have company from some of his Penn State teammates. It's day two, rounds two and three. In your mind, who are the players you definitely expect to go on Friday? And let's talk about maybe a couple of surprise candidates, because last year I didn't have Juice Scruggs on my bingo card going in the second round. And I think Brenton Strange went in the second round too. That was surprising to me.
Yeah, I think the two guys to watch on Friday night, the second and third rounds, would be, you know, Chop's counterpart in Adisa Isaac and Theo Johnson, a tight end. And starting with Adisa, you know, we talk about Chop not having the production or whatever. Adisa had it. You know, he averaged a little more than a tackle, tackle for loss per game over the last two seasons. You know, he just really ate up. I mean, he really made himself some money, especially last year, you know, coming off the injury that forced him to miss the 2021 season, knocks the rust off a bit in 22 and plays well still, and had an NFL decision on his hands, but he decided to come back for the 2023 season. For, you know, again, the team goals, but also individually to continue that upward trajectory and solidify himself really as a day two guy. And I think he did. I mean, whether it's, you know, mid to late second round or early third round, I would be very surprised if Adisa makes his way out of the second and third rounds. And then Theo Johnson, you know, talk about production, right? Like, he probably wasn't utilized as much as he should have been in this Penn State offense. When you look at the skill set that he has, I mean, he still made big plays, but there was a stretch in 2022 where he finished a season where he had a catch of 25 yards or more in six of the final seven games. And we saw that in flashes last year, but, you know, one of the many knocks on Mike Yurcich was that he didn't utilize Theo Johnson enough. And I think an NFL team will. They see a guy at his size with his speed in a tight end class that has Brock Bowers, who could go in the top 10. Mm-hmm. But outside of him, like, there's no sure thing. And so I think Theo Johnson, with the performance that he had at the combine, with all the tangibles and intangibles that he brings to the table, I think he's maybe a late second, but I think he definitely finds his way in the third round.
Johnny, let me ask you this, because this isn't tough love, but I think it's something we've both talked about. Is Theo Johnson a luxury item for an offense? What I mean is, do you see him as a three-down tight end, a guy that's not afraid to get his nose bloodied, will stick his nose in there and be an impactful blocker? I think Brenton Strange got much better at that his final year at Penn State. And I do think at Jacksonville, they view him as a guy that they could keep on the field, whether it's a run or a pass. Do you see Theo either improving in that skill, or is he close? I guess what I'm asking you, is he closer to Mike Gesicki as a quote unquote tight end, or really a big slot, or is he closer to a Freiermuth, you know, or a Brenton Strange, and more of a guy that I think NFL teams can feel good they could keep him on the field?
I'll try to middle this a little bit, Bob. I think right now he is closer to the Gesicki end of it in terms of his blocking prowess, but I think he'll get there. I think he'll put in the work necessary, and whether maybe that's putting on a couple more pounds or just dialing in a little bit more, I think he'll get there as a blocker. But right now, you know, is he a luxury asset, a luxury item? Maybe. But there are teams that are going to be sitting there in the third round and thinking, hey, we're set at wide receiver. Yeah. We're good on the offensive line. But boy, it would be really nice to have a big body who can run like he runs and open up this offense even more and take bodies away, you know, from the outside to put them in the middle of the field and create mismatches. And I think that he can really do that for a team. So he might be a luxury item right now, but I think in 2-3 years, I think he can become more of a well-rounded tight end in the league.
All right. Well said, Johnny. That was pretty impressive how you kind of covered all the bases there. I think what you're saying is accurate. I do think when you're as athletic as Theo is, you can improve and you can get better at that. And, you know, I think it really is up to Theo. I don't want to say Mike Gesicki was not a blocker at, he had no interest in blocking at Penn State. I think Mike would tell you that. I do think that Theo had his moments as a blocker, but I think he needs more moments. And I think even he would probably acknowledge that. But he is a guy that the testing at the combine, I don't think there's ever been a more athletic testing tight end at the combine in recent memory. He is that kind of athlete. And, you know, coaching scheme, all of that. I mean, in the third round, maybe who knows, he could sneak into the second round. Like,
yeah, definitely could.
But I mean, he's just a guy that athletically, it's really hard to pass on him. And if you project him as taking a step forward, boy, I mean, he could be a steal. But Johnny, as we talk about this draft, it just seems like there's like three levels to the draft with Penn State. We talked about it. It's Chop and it's Olu, and then there's a couple of guys that are kind of in the same conversation as to where they might go. And you know, it's Theo and it's Adisa. And then you get to, you know, actually it's four levels. Sorry, it's not three. Then you get to guys like Hunter and Caden Wallace and Curtis Jacobs. Probably not day two, maybe day two, outside chance, but probably early day three. And that could be fourth round or fifth round. There's an outside chance one of them could sneak into the third round. And then it's weird to say that because we kind of felt like it was such a strength, but the corners are kind of are the last level, you know, and a lot of that has to do with Kalen King's drop, and also Johnny Dixon's health, because I think if he was healthy, I don't think he might be being viewed as a sixth or seventh round pick, but he could be there. And then, you know, Daquan Hardy is maybe one of the more interesting players in this Penn State draft class, because he could go undrafted, or Penn State had a corner named John Reed. I think he went in the fourth round to the Texans, which was a little bit of a surprise. But Johnny, to be able to play nickel or slot corner in the NFL, not a lot of guys can do it. He can return kicks. He was deadly as a punt returner when given the chance. So you could make – it's almost like a case of extremes with Daquan. He could go earlier than we expect, or he could – I hate to say it, but I think I've seen some mock drafts where he does not go in seven rounds. I don't agree with that. I think he is a draftable player, and I think he could go earlier than people expect. But it speaks to the variance of where they see these corners at Penn State.
Definitely. First, touching on that tier above them with Hunter and Caden and Curtis. Really cool to see specifically for Caden.
Yeah.
We know the kind of struggles that he had at Penn State earlier in his career with consistency. You know, he would make a great block one play and then get completely bamboozled on the next. But he had a great final season at Penn State in 2023. And, you know, like you mentioned, I think on the last podcast, or, you know, you've mentioned it before, Bob, the rapid rise for him up the board in recent weeks ahead of the draft has been really cool to see. Hunter Norzad transferring in from the Ivy League to man the center spot for this team last year, and moving over from guard, kind of doing the dirty work and getting rewarded for it now, because he could go in the fourth round. I believe Dane Brugler actually has him as Penn State's fifth highest ranked prospect behind the aforementioned, you know, Chop and Hulu and Theo and
Adisa.
And Adisa.
Yep.
Kalen is a really interesting case, because coming into this season, you know, he was a projected first round pick. And I guess that might speak more to the, you know, trying to rank these guys before the season even starts. But coming off of 2022, I mean, he ranked second in the FBS in pass breakups. You know, he was feasting in a secondary that, you know, really was a one-sided secondary, because quarterbacks and offensive coordinators were not looking Joey Porter Jr.'s way. And Kalen King thrived in that environment. You know, he was that press man corner. He was sticking guys like glue. he just didn't really do it as much last year. I don't know what, like, it's really hard to explain other than he just wasn't the same player. He got cooked in the Ohio State game by Marvin Harrison Jr. And again, we've mentioned this, a lot of corners have been and will continue to be cooked by Marvin Harrison Jr. But, you know, the tape has stuck with him, I think, throughout this pre-draft process. There's nothing he can really do about it. And I think that's why you're seeing him drop into the fifth, sixth round discussion. I mean, there's a chance that a team that needs a nickel corner, it's a very specific position, but there's a chance that a team that needs a nickel corner takes Daquan Hardy before Kalen King or Johnny Dixon is off the board. And Dixon has had his issues in the pre-draft process with injuries. You know, wasn't able to compete at the combine or at pro day, had to bail out of the Senior Bowl early. So that's an unfortunate situation for him. You don't want to see that. But it's just a really weird spot, right, with these corners that were so integral to Penn State's success the last two seasons. You'll probably be the last guys off the board for Penn State come this weekend.
Yeah. I mean this in all sincerity. I don't want Penn State fans or anyone to construe this the wrong way. I really hope, Johnny, that when Kalen does get picked, he rebounds and becomes more like the player that he was not only in 2022, but also towards the tail end of 2021 as a true freshman. They were playing him a lot more, and he was ready for the challenge down the stretch. I really hope, you know, he can get back to that level. You talked about the mystery of his season. You're right. Marvin Harrison, it was not a great game for Kalen, but Marvin Harrison did that to everyone. My point, though, is I really hope a couple of years from now, and I mean this, that Kalen doesn't look back at his Penn State career and regret coming out early.
I agree. Now, look, Bob, I agree because for his struggles last year, every time that we talked to Kalen King, he was always upfront about it. He was always honest about everything, and specifically about himself and his performances. And we talked to him, I think it was a week or two after the Ohio State game. And he was like, look, it wasn't my best game, but I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to get better from it. And a lot of guys would run from that, right? Like if you have a game like that and Penn State communications, the athletic communications, you know, the sports information directors come to you and say, hey, can you talk to the media this week? Some guys would just say no. Some guys would be like, yeah, you know what? I'm good. But Kalen was always good with us. For the majority of his Penn State career, he was a good, really good player. So hopefully this is a situation where wherever he lands, it's a good situation for him. And he really brings it in the rookie mini camp and in training camp. And he turns some heads because there's a really good player in there. It's just a matter of him finding it again.
Yep. All right. Before we get out of here on the Blue White Breakdown, Penn State draft class, hopefully it'll be 10. We'd both like to see 10. I think all those players are deserving of being drafted, Johnny. I know you agree with that too. Yep. Let's each make a bold prediction for the draft. I'll give you the first swing. I have a bold prediction. You make a bold prediction, and we'll see if we're eating crow at this time next week.
Well, this is on the spot. So if you already have yours, you go ahead and I'll
come. I love putting you on the spot, McGonagall, more than anything else about it. I do it like once a month to you, and I like to keep you on your toes. My bold prediction is this: at least one or both of Hunter Norzad and Caden Wallace will go in the third round, not the fourth round. At least one of those guys, maybe both. Hunter, because he is one of the best centers in a class, and a lot of teams need center, but he can also play guard. And I think that is something that's going to help him. I think it helped Juice Scruggs go into the second round. Last year, I could see him in round three. And you talked about it. Caden Wallace, I'm seeing a lot of people say, not only is this guy going to get drafted, this guy is going to be a starting right tackle in the league sooner rather than later. If it's true, Johnny, I mean, he's going in round three. That's how I read those tea leaves. If you can get somebody of you as a starting right tackle, whether it's this year or next year, like look at what happened with Rashid Walker. He went all the way in the seventh round, I think, to the Packers, and now I think he's going to be one of the better left tackles. If people look at that and see Caden Wallace and can kind of make that projection, I think he could go day two, round three. I think both those guys could go around three.
All right, so I have my prediction now. And
see, I filibustered a la James Franklin style, just long enough for you to get it together. Go ahead.
I appreciate it. I appreciate the James filibuster. He's
the master.
He's the master of it. Politicians, if you're on the floor and you're about to filibuster, go look at a James Franklin press conference. Yep. To get some inspiration. You know how players like will listen to like hype up music before a game? Any politician who's about to go filibuster, just go watch a James Franklin press conference and you'll be jacked.
Yep.
Chop Robinson goes before the 18th pick. I think a team will trade up for him. I think a team, very specific team. Now,
that's bold, and it is bold. It's legit bold. It is.
I'm still working on the mock draft, so this might actually end up going against what I end up predicting. I haven't decided yet.
I think you're committed now to doing this in your mock
draft. I think now I have to. I think a team is going to be enamored with his explosiveness, with the skills that we've talked about.
Uh-huh.
And I think a team is, it might be viewed by the draft community as a reach. I'll go even further than the top 18. I'll go top 15.
Ooh.
I think a team, it gets that enamored with him that they want him in the building. They want him coming off the edge and creating havoc in the backfield for them. And because I don't think, stats aside, that kind of speed and those skills come around often for an edge rusher. And I think you're going to find maybe it's a team with a defensive head coach that likes to get aggressive, both in the draft and on the field. And I think a team is going to end up taking a chance on Chop Robinson earlier than you would expect.
There you have it. Johnny McGonigal with the Buc-ee's bold prediction of the week on the Blue White Breakdown. Are you listening? Are you listening, Buc-ee's?
Presented by Roback.
Presented by Roback. We are trying desperately to get some more merch from these people. So I think hopefully our boss doesn't like call us on the carpet. So maybe it's the unofficial Buc-ee's bold prediction of the week. I think that is bold, Johnny, and I would love it if that came true for you. And I would not be surprised. I'm sticking with my third round predictions. We'll see how we do next week. But guys, we went a little bit long, but I hope you enjoy this weekend with the draft. Hopefully Penn State gets all 10 guys picked. Hopefully Chop goes in round one. Hopefully there are some pleasant surprises, not only for the Penn State corner room, but also for guys like Curtis Jacobs, the offensive lineman, Adisa Isaac, Theo Johnson, all those guys. I'm probably overlooking one. But anyway, it's going to be a busy, busy weekend. We're looking forward to it. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.